Blog Talk Radio.
Provide the great news of Eastern Airlines to listeners around the world. It's that time again, folks. The radio voice of Eastern Airlines is on the air. Just as we have over the past 234 broadcasts, we thank you for listening in. Now, this is a place you can come to each week to talk and listen to the wonderful men and women known as the Eastern Airlines family, sharing our thoughts and memories of the best days of our lives. Our broadcasts are about the Eastern years as early as 1928, from Pitcairn to Eastern and even the new Eastern Airlines group. We hope you'll be part of our show and participate. For those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is to call us at 213-816-1611, and it'll put you on Neil Producer's board, telling us, and you can tell us what's on your mind or adding this to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil has opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you need to press the number 1 on your phone's keypad to join in. For those who cannot listen in on a computer, you can still hear and participate just by calling the number you just heard. Also, keep in mind that your telephone microphone picks up any noises that might be on in the background, so make sure you mute your phone or keep it as quiet as possible during the broadcast. Now, just as a reminder for those wanting to listen to our show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, you can connect by going to www.ealradioshow.com on your computer, or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.repaonline.com. That's the site of Retired Eastern Airlines Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone number for the show again. It's area code 213-816-1611. Also, as a reminder, at the end of each of our shows, we usually have time remaining for Eastern music or music we grew up with while working at Eastern. At each end of the broadcast, we will feature a different recording artist that we all will recognize or play a genre of recording selected by your producer. We hope you'll stick around after the sign-off music has played for this part of the EAL radio show. Now, Neil, can we pull the chocks? And it is time that we crank up the R2800, so let's get this show rolling down the runway.
Okay, Captain, we're clear to start, so I've got the extinguisher bottle standing by, and here we go.
Roll. Clear, prop.
Clear.
I just got a long memory, that's all.
Dearie, do you remember when we
stayed up all night to get Pittsburgh on a crystal set?
Keystone movies, Coogan and Chaplin, made you laugh and then cry.
Test your memory, my dearie. Do you recall when Orville Wright flew at Kitty Hawk? But take it from me, I would rather walk.
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
Do you remember?
Uh-huh.
If you remember.
Well?
Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
I'll kill you.
Dearie, do you remember how they
loved Holly Lauder's ox?
My, wasn't the palace packed.
Jenny Lind, presented by Barnum, sang her sweet lullaby.
Test your memory, my dearie.
Chicago, all in flames, sure caused a terrific row.
They blamed it on Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by. Do you remember? Well, if you remember, then you're a whole lot older than, quite a bit older than, you're older than I.
Steve.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this week we'll be going back to those days we spent and airport terminals across the eastern system. And as we do, let's first talk about what's missing today in the workplace that many of us remember. If you'd like to take part in tonight's show, please feel free to just jump right in during any discussion. And we may have left out a few, so just give us a call at area code 213-816-1611. And I guess we have a special guest here in the studios at Roaring Gap with us. And he is my brother, Bill Thompson, who is visiting. And he is also here to claim a first on Eastern Airlines. And he will be sharing that story with you very shortly. And his name is Bill Thompson. Bill, would you take just a moment to share your story with us?
I would be glad to, Steve. This was back what I call, and we all call, the good old days. I got to fly with my hero, my brother Steve Thompson, and his best friend, a gentleman named Ray Meadows. I was flying in the jump seat on the back of the door, which... I remember when the flight attendant would come in, I would have to get up and move so she could come in to the cockpit. But we were flying along, and Mr. Meadows, the captain, mentioned to my brother, he said, "You might need to move just a moment. I need someone to take your seat." I was 11 years old at the time, and I was scared to death, but had the thrill of my entire life, I'm telling you. I did get to sit in the co-pilot seat, and Mr. Meadows explained to me the workings of the controls and those kinds of things. He said, "Now, you just need to hold the yoke, I guess you call it, and the steering wheel there, and keep the little dot on the cross, the T," and he said, "You'll be fine." Of course, I thought I was flying the plane, and you know, I might have been, but I know to a young 11-year-old who was there with his brother, I was so proud to be there, first of all, and made my lifelong dream come true. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. And it was just a pleasure to be able to be there with my big brother and his best friend.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. And an official announcement, he is here to claim to be the youngest pilot who ever manipulated the controls of an Eastern Airlines airplane with passengers on board, and I am a witness to that.
Hey, Steve.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate
it. Steve, the radio
show accepts. Any comments?
The radio show accepts that claim. So we hereby declare, Bill, you with that honor of being the youngest pilot controlling an aircraft. How does that sound?
No,
pretty
no.
Good?
That no,
is
I don't
perfect.
Think so.
That Steve, is I perfect. Think I think I have you beat. This is George.
Uh-oh, George.
My son did it on the Airbus when he was 8 years old.
Wow.
Does he have a reliable witness?
There were three of us in the cockpit plus the flight attendant. Who wound up calling him Captain Matthew when she came in the cockpit.
I think the only thing that would top that, George and Bill, would be a female pilot now pregnant. Flying
exactly.
But I have to tell you, you know, Steve, unlike your brother, when Matthew, he did it for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, And he said, Dad, you know, he said, could I go in the back? I really want to watch the movie. So he got up and went and watched the movie instead.
See, I think that may disqualify him.
Well, yeah, it might have. That's why I brought it up. Yeah.
Good.
Oh, that's good. Steve, let's get a little bit more serious now and get into our program so we can talk some more at the end of the program.
All right. I guess we can call tonight's show Things You Don't See in Airport Terminals Anymore. If you can think back to the 50s, 60s, or 70s, and maybe into the 80s, you would see an entirely different terminal than the ones we use today. Go back with us as we discuss these differences, and do we really miss some of them? Maybe some of you do. Well, air travel used to be a lot more expensive and exclusive before the industry was deregulated. And many airports, therefore, had a lot more amenities than were included in the cost of your pricey ticket. Of course, the events of 9/11 changed the design and operation of U.S. airports, as did technology and health concerns. See how many of these features, if any, you remember. Chuck, how about starting off your trip down airport terminals memory lane?
Why, sure, Steve. I bet we all can remember this one. They were called observation decks. Plane spotting as a hobby has become less conventional since 9/11. Watching planes take off and land was a free and exciting activity that a lot of children enjoyed with their parents back in the day. So much so that almost every airport had a glass enclosed observation area outside the security check, where the public could sit for hours to watch and even photograph jumbo jets. One of my personal things that I did when I was a child, as you guys know from the program, my dad was a operations manager during World War II, and we logged a lot of miles opening up different airfields. And I had logged, before I was 5 years old, my mother said I had logged 10,000 flying hours. And they said, to keep my brother and I, and so we wouldn't run around the airport and embarrass them, we got to go on observation towers. So I'm sure a lot of parents did the same thing. Maybe we can hear from other hosts and listeners out there about some of the airport amenities.
You know, when I first was hired, I was flying the Convair 440, and I flew with a captain, Jimmy Singleton, and a lot of folks remember Jimmy. He was always on the go, and he was just a bundle of energy. And most of the energy was outside operating the Eastern airplanes. It was his own business, and he got me involved in real estate, I might add. But Jimmy was quite a guy, and we had landed at Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and we were at the terminal there, and of course, people boarded the airplane, the Convair, up the stairways that extended from the airplane. And there was a deck, an observation deck, and there were a lot of people that were out there, right out in the open. And, boy, you almost felt like you were an actor on the stage. And Jimmy looked at them, and he said, Holland, he said, do you know why all those people are up there looking at us? And I said, no, I think they probably want to see an airplane fly. And I said, no, or Jimmy said, no, they're waiting for us to crash. They want to see us crash. And I kind of chuckled about that. But at any rate, that was his idea as to why people. And I always remember the observation deck at Pittsburgh. I guess all of you guys, especially Steve, you and any of the other pilots listening to the show, all remember the Pittsburgh observation deck, because lots of folks used to line those decks out on the top of the terminal there, even in frigid weather, very, very cold, like minus 10, 15, 20 degrees. They'd still be out there watching airplanes. Amazing.
I remember colorful, distinctive luggage tags. Baggage tags affixed by airlines and airports used to be as different and collectible as postage stamps. Each airport had its own logo and color combination and overall design, so that you could tell from many yards away if the bag was destined for Chicago or Paris. In the name of efficiency, baggage tags are now computer-generated and are all of the same generic zebra-striped black and white barcode variety. I still have a couple of some of the old luggage tags. Matter of fact, I was a ticket agent, and I remember red, I think, was New Orleans. Does anyone remember losing their luggage, because of a bag tag screw-up? Well, I used to work in baggage claim, and let me tell you, all bags do look the same. And the best tip I can give you all is put your name inside the bag, because those baggage tags do come off, and I'm sure those strips come off also. And with the name inside the bag, you would get your bag within 24 hours or 48 hours at the most if it got lost. But that was my story on baggage claim.
Yeah.
Well, this is Bill again. I have a comment on the baggage claim also. Because of lost baggage, it really hurt my career as a college football kicker. I had been up after I graduated from high school. I went up to Maryland to visit my brother and his family, and was flying back to I guess Atlanta, maybe Asheville. I'm not sure where I was flying into. And my luggage was lost, and inside my luggage was my high-topped football kicking shoe. It was never found. I did pretty well in high school with that, but I just never did master that low-cut square-toed kicking shoe like I did with that high top. So that hurt my career tremendously. I'm sure I could have gone on to the pros had I not lost that kicking shoe.
You got a good long and suit, of course, didn't you, Bill? Bags have become known to become lost, I guess I should say. And that's interesting. But, boy, they've come a long way since the old bag tags. And I remember Eastern put into the scanner. You remember the round circles that we used to use? And that scanner would be able to tell where that bag was going to go. So they've come a long way. Don't see that in the airport. Cecile, what do you got?
This is George.
Well, that's what you just, George. Yeah, George, you got something to say?
Yeah, how about the Hare Krishnas? They were found in almost every airport terminal. The berobed followers of Krishna used to hand out flowers while soliciting donations at every major airport. And they were so ubiquitous in the 1970s and 80s that, if you recall, it was included as a joke in the 1980 farcical film Airplane. Well, tighter security combined with the 1997 ban imposed at LAX by the city council eventually prevented the sect from approaching airline passengers as they tried to catch their flights. Do any of you remember them or have issues or special contact with them?
I sure do remember them.
Steve, how do you remember them?
I just remember being not one of their fans.
Well,
you didn't like the songs that they sang?
I thank God for Robert Stack when he came through the terminal in an airplane and he clobbered him. You remember? He hit him in the face and knocked him down.
My daughter swore she'd never go to another movie with me after seeing Airplane.
Oh, really?
I would start laughing before the punchline ever came.
Yeah, as you recall, after a while, the Hare Krishnas were pinned in on the corridors of the airport terminals. They had to stay within a confined area, and they couldn't get out of that area, so that really restricted them from soliciting donations, which that was the purpose, I believe. I hope we have no Harry Krishner is listening to us tonight. We want to be as political correct as possible.
Are they still around? I mean, I haven't seen any in a long time.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't make any money anywhere, George. But it was a good time back in those days when we shared the corridors with the Harry Krishner types, and I think they became known as skinheads for a while, didn't they? Didn't they shave their head?
Yeah.
Of course, everybody does that now. Everybody I know has got skinhead.
They're years ahead of their time.
Yeah, right. Well, George, what do you got? Well, that's it. That's a good comment. That's
okay.
Good.
Let me start on courtesy cars. Believe it or not, one of the perks offered by most major airports to businessmen, they did most of the flying at that time, was the use of airport-owned automobiles for a nominal fee. Eventually, rental cars would become a big airport business, and those important businessmen would have to wait in line just like the rest of us, average humans, to pick up a subcompact. Where did they disappear to? I question that because every time I go to the Asheville airport, I see all kinds of subcompact economy cars waiting to be picked up.
Well, Jill, do you have to, like most terminals that I have been in the last few years, the courtesy cars have been restricted to areas outside the terminal, and most terminals have a little telephone that you can get on a courtesy bus that shuttles you over to their courtesy car rental area.
That's what I've seen, too. And I chuckle because, you know, used to you could just go right to the courtesy desk or the desk wherever in the 70s and run a car, and they'd just whisk you away to get your car and you'd be done.
Yeah.
But nowadays it's a little more difficult.
Well, you know, I question as to Avis. I wonder if they ever got to number one, because they were always trying to be number one in their ads. They're trying to be Hertz. Wonder if they ever made it.
We are not going to go there. I think their number two guy is long gone.
Yeah, I like the guy, the new guy now that is National. The guy used to be on the Seinfeld program. And he's going to the car. Yeah, I like him. He's good. He's my man. Oh, well, John, what do you got for us? John Reinhart, happy to
have
you.
Neil, I'm telling you, if your flight happened to be delayed and you didn't feel like reading, watching TV was one way to make the time pass quickly. Most airports had a section of TV chairs that featured corn-operated televisions, which would provide 30 minutes of local programming for 25 cents. During that time, Days of Our Lives and As the World Turned were the two most popular programs out there. Since pretty much everyone has their own portable entertainment these days, the telechair, as it was called, is not economically viable in most airports. Have you seen any of these around the terminals these days? I also recall when folks started to carry their laptops, some larger terminals provided cubicles to give privacy and recharge the batteries. Do you remember this? The other thing I remember is the fine dining restaurants that many of the airports used to have. In fact, the Charlotte Douglas Airport had the Dogwood Room restaurant, which was one of the nicer places to eat in Charlotte at the time. And one of the early dates I took my wife on was to this restaurant, so it has a lot of memories for me.
What'd you watch, DC-3's Take Off and Land, John?
Well, as a matter of fact, right, we did.
Okay.
And,
you know,
I knew I was back in the South. when I finally got to Charlotte and had a glass of iced tea.
That's right.
I see. Sweetened or unsweetened. Yeah.
Yep.
I think the 25
cents. I was so happy.
Yeah, the TV chairs and 25 cents putting in that machine. I can imagine, you know, if you're watching a pretty good show and all of a sudden your flight is announced, it's departing, and you're about three quarters of the way through the show and you run out of quarters or whatever. But I think that all stopped when they started putting some X-rated movies in those TVs and the kids were watching.
Back then, but, Neil, 25 cents was a lot of money, and you didn't want to lose it if you put it in there.
Yeah, you bet. 25 cents could give you a cycle in the washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Still, I think.
Well, you know, our show tonight is confined to the terminal building, but I think one thing that has changed about airports has been watching the airplanes take off and land on the runways, and cars would park underneath the airport or the flight patterns, watching the airports the airplanes take off and land from there. And that was usually a big congregation of cars sitting there watching the airplanes take off and land. and those, of course, have gone away.
Well,
now, Steve, you know, now hey, I never Steve. Took her out to one of those.
Down in Miami, that was called watching the submarine races.
Right. I was going to say, if you think they were watching airplanes take off and land.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. I don't
you
think
told
they
me.
Were watching the planes. I really
That's
don't think
what
they
you
were
told me
planes.
You were doing with my sister.
Oh, no.
Oh, golly, please. Steve,
well,
how about three baggage carts?
Baggage carts, yeah. Let's move on here.
All right, we have there was free baggage carts if you remember. In many other parts of the world, luggage carts are owned by the individual airport and are provided to customers as well as convenience. This was once the standard in the U.S. as well until the late 60s. When the buggy business was subcontracted out to a company called SmartCart, airports found that they could save money by not having to retrieve carts from the far reaches of the parking lot or worry about passengers taking them home with them. If you're one of these, you might want to keep them as their worth may go up as a collector item.
I can't recall.
Any comments?
I can't recall free baggage, I mean, luggage carts. I can't recall that. Maybe I'm not old enough.
No, you used to take them out to your car from the terminal so you didn't have to carry your luggage to the car. I remember doing that at Kennedy.
Oh. Okay. No. Did you return it?
Of course.
Well, that was before my time.
Right, the empty car part right next to your car. That's where it was parked.
That's right. Yep.
They do that now, right? For like a 50 cents or a dollar or something, you can get one of those carts?
I believe you're right.
I don't know if you guys got grocery stores called Aldi's, they have food carts. You can put 25 cents in to get a food cart. Yeah, and then you can take it in, shop, put all your stuff in there, and then you take it back and you get your quarter back at the end. But I found out when I went into the first time, the guy said, "Hey, you want my cart?" I said, "Yeah." So somebody had told me about it. I saved 25 cents, by the way.
Well,
you got to have your quarter ready. I mean, the people are fast, especially here in the villages.
Oh, yeah. 80 years old with a golf cart.
I'm telling you.
How fast can you get?
Well, how about welcoming, bidding farewell at the gate. Again, tightening security now prevents friends and family members from walking almost up to the jetway to greet arriving passengers or clutch them tightly for one last farewell hug before departure. These regulations also make a major plot point of 1970s movie Airport Impossible. After all, that's how Academy Award winner Helen Hayes sneaked aboard an international flight. And do you remember that in the movie?
I don't remember that. You guys remember that?
I do.
Well, what happened?
Yeah,
what happened?
She was a sweet little old lady that just kind of snuck on board. And there has been a lady, and I'm not sure where she's located at this point, but out in California, she was boarding flights like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
I remember that.
And I think she was. She wasn't as pretty as Helen Hayes, even
no.
Helen Hayes' age.
And not near as nice either.
No. But you know what I am reminded of, Steve? In the bidding farewell years ago back in the 60s and 70s were those prolonged hugs and kisses there as the departing loved one boarded the airplane. And some of them were, you know, they were pretty good, I mean, to watch. And I know I stopped and watched the whole thing. And I don't know if you guys remember that, but I do. I thought that was kind of exciting.
You didn't even have to put a quarter into the TV to see that either, right, Neil?
But today, I don't know what they do. They do it higher than a mile anyhow.
Well, they don't have the cockpit door open anymore either.
There you go. You're right. Thank God.
That something about those cockpit cuties that we know about?
Yeah. Okay. Chuck, what do you remember about insurance kiosks?
Well, for many years there were not only kiosks with smiling personalities ready to sell you flight insurance, about 25,000 coverage or more for a few dollars, but also self-serving vending machines located near or just about every gate. Despite the occasional Conan's kook who bought a huge policy with the intent of blowing up the airplane, the pre-flight insurance business slowly faded out simply because as air travel became more affordable and common, people didn't view a flight as any more life-threatening than a road trip, and revenues dropped. Did anybody ever attempt to buy a policy? Any of the hosts out there or listeners? I know I did.
Yeah, I did too.
I did too. When I went to Bogota, Colombia, my travel agency told me to buy kidnapping insurance. So I did, just in case.
Especially, you know, that would be good, especially if you're flying, you know, on Russian Airlines and to buy a policy. Or some of these third world countries that operate airlines in their country, they probably still have insurance booths there. But I remember we used to have insurance booths as you walk down the corridor. They would have you know, different insurance. United of Omaha seems to register in my mind right now as having a booth in Dallas, Texas at the old Love Field. And I think it was called Love Field in Dallas. And I stopped by there often and chatted with the person that was people that were selling insurance just to be friendly.
Well, can't you buy cancellation insurance today?
I guess you can, but not at the airport. Can you? I don't know.
But you could buy it through the airlines. It's like buying pillows and blankets and everything else they sell today.
Yeah. My pillow.
Okay. outdoor stairs as your only option. Until the jetway was invented, all passengers had to walk outside onto the tarmac and climb a set of portable stairs to board the aircraft. This was often inconvenient depending on weather conditions or on the passenger's personal fear of flying. The first jetway-covered corridors were installed by Delta Airlines at Atlanta's airport in May 1961. I thought Eastern was the first one to do this. Was it? Was it Eastern? Does anybody know? I guess it was Delta.
Well, gee whiz. I thought it was Eastern, but maybe it was Delta. I guess it was.
Guess we'd have to check.
Since my script says it was.
Well, that must be right then.
Dad's going to say that it's got to be right.
But I knew for you. Yeah, I remember in the old Atlanta, Steve, maybe you can back me up on this, but in the old Atlanta Hart, before Hartsfield came along and Jackson came along, it was the old Atlanta Airport terminal. And in that terminal, Eastern Airlines, when you went into their waiting areas to board flights, we had plush seating. And when you went across the hall to the other side, Delta Airlines, they had folding chairs, and almost folding chairs. I mean, these were iron and very hard to sit on, no cushion. But Eastern Airlines had the finest chair in an airport terminal. I recall that. And I always thought about Eastern being so, I mean, Delta being so frugal in their spending. They sure didn't spend much money back in the 60s that I recall for passenger comfort, especially in the terminal. Anybody recall that?
Yeah, I don't remember that, Neil.
Well, I just want to put a dig in to Delta.
I want to give a shout out to George and his people in New York, because they always say New Yorkers are not very friendly. I flew one time from Brazil to New York, a couple of stops to get there. And when we left Brazil, it was in the summertime, so my wife and I were in shorts and, you know, short sleeve shirts and everything. And when we got off the airplane in New York, because they didn't want to stop in Miami for some reason, I don't know why, we thought we were going to stop in Miami. When we got off in New York, it was like wintertime there, so it was very, very cold. We stayed over for a couple of hours to get our flight, and when we came down into the jetway. Now, George could probably stay. I guess that's JFK had jetways way back in when. And we were standing there freezing to death, and this couple, a very distinguished couple, come up behind us, and the lady was in a full-length hooded mink coat, and the gentleman was in a cashmere overcoat. And they looked at us, and they said, the lady said, "You know, honey, you look like you're freezing to death." And she says, "Yes, we are." And, you know, she took that fur coat off, and he took that cashmere coat and put it on us. And when we got in the airplane, we were riding a pass. We got on first class, and they were in first class towards the other side of the airplane. So we got out first. So we walked into the terminal, and we couldn't find them. And we were getting very excited about this mink coat because, you know. And we were standing there, and they didn't show up. They had gone and got a cup of coffee and come back and looked. And we were standing by the Eastern counter by then. And she says, "Well, we hope that the coats helped you out." And they were the nicest people. So, George, I have to take my hat off to New Yorkers. They were the kindest people we've ever met.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's really nice. Except that it turned out that the coats that they had on, they were stolen from two other passengers. So they wanted to see if you would get caught with them first.
If I could get them out the gig, right?
That's good.
That's good, George.
Let somebody else take them through customs.
Well, let's talk about smoking on airplanes, George.
Okay, well, you know, for many years, there were no restrictions on where you could light up in an airport. Heck, you could even light up in the cockpit if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But then the Surgeon General got involved with all the health warnings, and designated smoke areas became the norm. When cigarettes were first banned on certain flights, the most congested area in the airport arrival lounge wasn't the baggage claim, but rather the perimeter around the first pedestal ashtray passengers encountered as they exited, because they all wanted to light up. Today, smoking restrictions at many airports are so tight that people have to stand some 20 feet or more outside the exit doors of the building before they can smoke. I know that probably some of us used to smoke, so did you ever wait outside O'Hare in the winter with the temperature at minus 25 puffing on a Chesterfield, a Camel, or a Marlboro? Anybody?
Yeah, kept your fingers warm.
That's a good way. That's the only way you keep them fingers warm.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember when JR was shot and my husband was the captain on the airplane, and he did not leave the gate area until he found out who had shot JR. And everybody on the airplane was cheering.
Boy.
So, what can I tell you?
That the captain has the last say-so and is fully in command of the airplane.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, why don't we head on to passengers and families smartly dressed for travel? If you were to look at travelers in airport terminals back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you'd be surprised to find folks dressed in T-shirts, cargo pants, shorts, flip-flops, nose, mouth, and eye rings, tattooed bodies, and hairstyles from outer space. Instead, dresses were worn by ladies who also wore gloves in the 50s and 60s. Men dressed in suits and wore fedoras, which they dipped when meeting a lady. Two-tone shoes for men and women were vogue during this era. Children were dressed in their Sunday best. And, of course, employees using C3 passes had to pass the gate agent's approval before boarding. Have we really come a long way? Personally, I miss those days when you looked like an air traveler instead of a Greyhound bus rider from New York to LAX. Any comments?
Yeah, it was the airlines, I guess, were considered, well, first of all, an expensive way to go from point A to point B, and people tended to dress their best, just like coming out of Sunday church service. And it was nice to see folks doing that, and we see the pictures of the 50s and 60s, and I remember two-tone shoes. I guess you do too, Steve and John and Bill.
Yes.
And Chuck. I think I had a set of two-tone. I don't know. It was something that Elvis Presley sang about. No, that was blue suede shoes.
There you go.
It was also a sign of respect for the company you worked for.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't get on the airplane unless the kids and all the kids, you know, that were with a mother and father, they had to be dressed, and they hated it, absolutely hated it. When the
other
kids with their families had T-shirts and flip-flops.
But I have to say, my daughter was one of those kids that if mother was taking her to the bathroom, there was hell to pay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because something wasn't right, and mama wasn't happy.
There you go.
Well, folks, is there anything that we missed that you remember from those days of yesterday?
Yeah, Jim. No, is that Steve? This is George. I remember when the shuttle departed from the old Eastern hangar, which is now the new Delta, formerly U.S. Air Terminal at LaGuardia. Frank Lorenzo sold Eastern's new LaGuardia terminal to U.S. Airways. Prior to the Texas Air purchase, that was going to be the new Eastern terminal, but that chain took over. When we used the old hangar, the lines would extend outside the hangar during the holiday season, and you paid for your ticket on board. There was no zero security back then, I believe, but I'm not certain that a Boston ticket cost $24. Washington was $26 each way. And recall that we had Electras for backups, and then it was 727s. And remember also that we used the Ayatollah A300s for the Boston shuttle flights. These were the jets originally manufactured for Iran Air, but I think they were diverted over to Eastern when they put the government put some kind of hold on everything for Iran. The shuttle was truly innovative, the first air mass transit system. Does anybody think it would work again today?
I thought one of the airlines was doing that.
Who?
That's my question.
Well,
is there one doing it? I thought there was one.
Well, Trump Air is out of business, although Trump Air is still airing Trump.
Yeah.
Well, I do remember those days. I didn't like flying shuttle. I didn't like collecting the money in the air. A lot of paperwork, and you had to get it done very quickly. The girls that I was flying with were what we called shuttle queens, and they knew how to get it done in a very short period of time, and you would get a certain person on board that didn't want to pay money, and he'd say, write it off to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that would get, you know, that would get the call, you know, you'd have people waiting for you at the airport then. Yeah. But it was not something that I enjoyed working on. My husband at the time flew the Electra, so he was on it all the time, and I really tried to stay away from the shuttle.
Jill, I remember when sometimes the flight attendants would come up to the cockpit and they would say to us, hey, could you slow it up because we still have 10 or 15 rows to go to collect the fares. And we used to slow the airplane down.
Is it true that the shuttle was thought up by a flight crew member, a pilot?
Yes. A first officer on Eastern Airlines, and who was a big, heavyset guy whose name I don't remember.
That's good.
Well, I don't know about that. But I just remember walking out of the shuttle building and slamming the door on somebody, Jackie Kennedy's face, and with the Secret Service right behind her. And, you don't forget things like that.
Yeah. I remember my first day, I went on TDY, temporary duty, from Atlanta to New York, LaGuardia, and flew the shuttle for the very first time. And, boy, I tell you what, it was an operation all within itself. I mean, it had its own rules. Right,
oh,
George?
Yeah.
It didn't conform to any of the normal policies and procedures of normal flights. You just did your own thing on that shuttle.
Yeah.
The original fares on the shuttle were $12 to Boston and $14 to Washington.
Frank? Frank, are you with us tonight?
Yeah.
Thank you. Because we weren't going to sign off until you showed up.
I'm going to have to talk to you on the telephone and tell you what's been going on.
Okay.
What year was that, Frank?
Pardon?
What year were those fairs?
19. I think the shuttle started, what, 61?
Oh, okay.
That sounds about right.
And we operated temporary building while they were rebuilding the main terminal building. And we operated with super constellations.
Yeah. I think McIntyre was responsible for the shuttle, from what I understand. But it was originally conceived by American, and Eastern beat American to it. From what we...
Well, American, in the 70s, American attempted to run a shuttle in competition with the Eastern shuttle, and it lasted probably less than a year, and then they stopped. They couldn't. They found out they couldn't compete.
But reading the book From the Captain to the Colonel, I remember the discussion in there. One chapter, it said that American had thought of an idea of running a shuttle, and apparently Eastern had a spy amongst the American people, and they came back and reported to Captain Eddy or McIntyre or whatever, and Eastern jumped the gun, and so we were the very first people in the shuttle. But
when you were flying the 727, how long did it take you to fly gate to Washington?
Well, let me look in my logbook here, Frank.
no, off the head.
It was quick. I don't know, 40 minutes, 30 minutes, somewhere around there, 30, 40 minutes. George, you probably have a more accurate time.
Yeah, I flew the shuttle a lot. And I don't know if any of you gentlemen recall Les Morris. He was an Eastern captain. And Les and I, when I was a co-pilot, Les and I had a competition going. Who could make it the quickest from LaGuardia to Washington and Washington back to LaGuardia? And the way you could really cut about 10 minutes off was if, when you took off on runway 36, if instead of making a left turn and going up the Potomac River, you made a right turn and went up the Anacostia River. And that would cut about 10 minutes off the flight time, but you really had to bank the airplane at about 100 to 150 feet to get over to the Anacostia, so you stayed away from the White House, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the schedule gate-to-gate was 40 minutes to Washington.
Well, I wasn't too far off. Yeah.
Yeah, Neil, at that time I was a dispatcher down at the shuttle, actually as a manager at the time, and we used
Sonny.
To advance.
Is this Sonny?
Yes, it is. Yes. Hi, good evening.
Oh, good to hear you, Sonny.
You know, we
go
would advance one, we'd advance one flight, and then when the flight came in 20 minutes early, we would send it out on time. So, I mean, we was always turning them like that. And you're right, it was an airline of its own.
Yeah.
Had its own rules, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got so many of our past listeners and folks that have been on our show that are coming on tonight. And, golly, it's great to hear from you guys. It really is. And I'm having fun. Anyhow, we have just about run out of our time, but that's okay because we've got some more stuff to talk about. And so hang in there because I'm going to give you my thrill for the week because I got a great email from a young lady that was working for Eastern back in the 50s. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read you her email to me. Here is an email I received today, and it was today, this morning, and I thought I would read it on the air tonight. It goes, Neil, I will try to tune in for the Eastern Radio Show Monday tonight, which is tonight. Recently, I bought two new alarm clocks to set for things like this. The old one quit recently, as have many other things in this old house this past year. Lou, my husband, went home in March 2014, and while alive and enjoying retirement, it seemed he was almost delighted when something broke in the house, so he had something to fix. He had 30 years retirement from Eastern Airlines at home, and I miss him dreadfully. However, this month, I have been perusing The Wings of Man, the book, and am so grateful he was persuaded to write an article about his memories from the motor shop to the jet engine overhaul. My stories are there too, right behind his. Indeed, the Eastern Airlines family was the best place a person could ever work. As a young stewardess who lost my father at age 12, Captain Eddie was like a father figure to me. And so were captains like Rusty Hurd and Curly Tatham. I wonder if you knew them. Speaking of the propeller days, when I came with Eastern in December 1954, the terminal was the open air one right off 36th Street just for Eastern, with Pan Am a bit west down the street. Six of us were hired from Minnesota to come here. We stayed at the then Gateway Hotel and all walked across the street that first night to watch the planes boarding and also unloading. The breezy night air blew out our hair askew, but we loved every minute of being there. Our first taste and smell of becoming an airline people. It does indeed get into our blood. I know your name, Captain Neil Holland, but from way back when, but don't recall that we ever met. Sorry to take up so much of your time here tonight, but I was just down memory lane in the Wings of Man book, and then I found your email upon opening my computer. So here we are. Hopefully, I will remember to set both clocks for tomorrow's program. Sincerely, Marge Porter Lyles. P.S. I just wish Lou had lived to see this book in print and also to tune in to the radio show. It is great you are able to do this and keep it going. Best wishes for that endeavor. Marge, we hope you're listening tonight. You found a way to get into the computer and listen to us. And I'm going to open. I think I have all the microphones open. I see a blue light here, which means that light is not open. But, Marge, if you're with us, please just say hello. So I can assume that Marge is listening probably on her computer. But it's emails like Marge's that I just read that keep us going, at least me going, and our hosts have been so reliable, dependable, and spending so much time on these shows that it makes us, it makes me happy that that we're able to continue our broadcasting every Monday night. And and it's just great to have folks that do email that, that I just received. Cecile, real quickly, can you bring us up to date on our party that we're about to have?
Yes, our event is October 23rd, 24th, 25th in Fort Lauderdale at the Renaissance Hotel. And the book, The Wings of Man, author, plus Neil's book, The Wings of Many, all the authors, and George Jen's book. We're going to have authors signing their books. We're going to have music Friday night with the great DJ whom I spoke with today. He's going to have a flashback video. We're going to be treated to Pam Martina that used to sing with Julio Iglesias. That's Friday night. You get two free drink tickets. And then Saturday night, we're going to have Ed Wiegel as the guest speaker. And both days for only $100. If you have not received your invitation or the registration form, email me at Cecile, C-E-C-I-L-E, easternair@gmail.com. That's Cecile, C-E-C-I-L-E, at easternair@gmail.com. And I will give my phone number, help. I'm going to give it now. It's 954-415-1408. Since we are close to the event and you don't have access to a computer, feel free to call me and we'll get it to you. It's 954-415-1408 for a great time. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah, and I got a call from Bob Wilbur, Jr., and a lot of us pilots remember Bob because Bob was in the DC-9 hijacking in Boston with James Hartley, and Bob wanted to know when and where our reunion would be because he would like to stop by and say hello to some of the friends that he lives close to Fort Lauderdale, and he couldn't spend the entire 2 days there, but he's going to try to be there on Saturday and say hello. So, folks, what I'm saying here is that if you're living in the area and you just want to stop by, perhaps you want to buy some raffle tickets and win the great prize that Eastern, the new Eastern Airlines is offering, which is a weekend in Havana, and that's a trip airfare and hotel expenses there at Havana, whichever hotel they're using, I don't know, but they're going to for two people. It's going to be one of our prizes, and of course we're going to have money prizes. And you don't have to go to the casino nearby. Just buy some raffle tickets, and by golly, you might do better at the raffle than you would at the casino. So stop by on Friday or Saturday during the day. We'd be happy to have you there, talk with you. And by the way, the radio show is going to be doing some interviews, and those interviews we're going to broadcast a little bit later on in one of our shows, and we'll be taking plenty of videos and pictures that we will display on our website. And so we're going to have it really is going to be a great party for a lot of folks that should be, especially if you're in the southeast part of Florida. You should be there. And if you want to come from outside of the area that you have to fly into Fort Lauderdale, there are plenty of hotels. And, of course, Cecile said we're at the Renaissance Marriott. And you don't have to stay there to have a good time. All you have to do is show up Friday at about 10 o'clock in the morning. And, golly, Pete, you'll have a number of people to talk with. And if you want to really be entertained, Saturday night we have Ed Wiggle. And we have some great speakers for that event, plus great meals. So we'd be happy to have you there. And Cecile, give us your phone number and your website again, please.
Okay. You can also go on the email, and you can call me. But my website email, rather, is Cecile, C-E-C-I-L-E, EasternAir, @gmail.com. Phone 954-415-1408. And I just got a Gmail from someone, so it's working. C-I-L-E at EasternAir at gmail.com. To everyone there. That's the email.
Great, Cecile. I hear the good night music, Steve. Can you sign
up? Yes. Wow. What a great, great show we had tonight, Mr. Producer and Neil. Another outstanding topic. Now, you know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we worked. We feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, callers, listeners, guests, and hosts. We hope that you listen in again next week when our episode flight 236 departs the gate on time at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, we all say good night, Eastern family. Good night.
Good night, Easton.
Good night, Easton family.
Folks, we have no shows or no, we have no music after the end of our sign-off. We've used it during our show, and that's all we have for you tonight, except for the wonderful music of Lawrence Welk. This is a song, Good Night.